The Empty Spaces by Your Hearth. Written by Selena Trix. Narrated by Rhea314. Fandom, The Untamed. Rating, teen and up audiences. Archive warning, major character death. Characters, Lawanti and Mian Mian. All is well now that the Yilin patriarch is dead and gone. Luo Qingyang distantly mourns what had become of those she knew, back when she called herself Mian Mian. Life goes on. Work is busy. Cases pile up for private cultivators, since ordinary folk can't always access the aristocratic cultivation families. There's a case that involves the ghost of a farmer's wife on the outskirts of Kai Town. By his account, he appreciates her devotion, unshaken even by death, but prefers not to spend his nights scared witless by her spectral form. Qingyang packs a bag of supplies, sets off on her sword, and spends the night staked out in a field of Jielan. Qingyang started cultivating with the Jins when she was 12. She isn't from a wealthy family, but they were well off enough to pay for her first year at Jinlin Tai. After the promise she showed in that first year, the Jins allow her to stay free of charge. Cultivation comes easily to her. She's sensitive to spirits and assertive enough to banish them for good. The Jins are a wealthy sect, but never developed any unique cultivation styles like the Nis and their Daos, and the Lans and their music. Qingyang relies on her sword and has never suffered for it. If night hunting alone gets a little lonely without Jin Zuxuan and the other disciples, well, she never lets it affect her work. The moon tonight is just shy of fullness, inching its way up into the sky. Reclining among the shoots half a mile away from the farmhouse, Qingyang traces on its luminous surface the shapes of Changyu and her rabbit. This farmer is no Hao Yi displaying cakes to his departed wife in hopes of her return. All he wants is for her to rest, for them to move on. A white shape moves among the leafy shoots, causing Qingyang to start. The shape glows under the moonlight. Her eyes are black holes in her preternatural face. The farmer told Qingyang that his wife was 62 when she died, but this ghost bears no sign of age, not a wrinkle in her bloodless face, or strand of silver in her lank hair. Qingyang pushes herself up from her post, sword at ready, only for her path to be blocked by a thrumming streak of blue light. Qingyang stops in her tracks. The ghost shudders, then plows on. Another thrum resonates in the darkness. Another streak of blue. The ghost freezes. Qingyang turns around. Under the moonlight, she can see another white shape, this one much less frightening than the one she had come to seek. Honggun Jun, Qingyang complains. You're stealing my thunder. He is dramatic as ever. With a flap of a voluminous sleeve, his chin shimmers and disappears. Qingyang has not seen him for, well, it must be about 7 years now. In fact, the rumor mill had been whispering that he'd vanished from the cultivation world after the final battle against Wei Wuxian at Nevernight. But here he is, garbed in his spotless robes, and his delicate features look not a day older than when he had detained her outside the Jin's pavilion and thanked her for defending Wei Wuxian. That day, Mian Mian had torn the Jin's golden robes from her shoulders and didn't look back. Times were dark when the person who held the most integrity in the cultivation world was the former class clown. Mian Mian, who once would have been the first to rebuke Wei Wuxian, could only look to his example to rebuke the Jin's. She saw the blood drained from Jin Zuxuan's face and hated him in that moment. Hated that he was the son of his father. Hated that he wasn't trying to stop her. She hated his unwavering devotion to his family, which had once made him so honorable in her eyes. So she marched down the stairs of Jinlin Tai and didn't look back. A year later, her oldest brother in arms was dead, killed by the ghost general at the command of Chen Qing. 7 years on, and Qingyang can't work out whether she regrets defending Wei Wuxian. Madame Luo, says Lawanchi. He gestures towards the ghostly woman. Please. Mian Mian would have been flustered by Hong Gong Jun's intervention. 7 years on, Qing Yang raises an eyebrow at him, marching over to stand in front of the ghost. Ma'am, she says, in a tone that brooks no argument. You are going to have to stop haunting your husband. He gets that you're very devoted to him, but frankly, you look terrifying now, and he's not into that. How about you go back to hell and wait for him there? It doesn't look like he's got long to go. The ghost sways her incorporeal body in a universal sign of unwillingness. Lawanchi starts forward, and Qing Yang whips her sword arm out to block his way. What do you want from him? She asks. The ghost makes a half turn, taking a step. She stops, turns her sightless eyes towards them, and turns back to nod forwards. Qing Yang exchanges a glance with Lawanchi. Follow her? Hong Gongjun nods. The ghost leads them through the Jielan, winding up in a radish field. She doesn't have feet exactly, but she does a ghostly approximation of a stomp over a certain patch of soil. There's something buried here? The ghost nods. Qing Yang shoots a look at Lawanchi. She cannot lie to me, he confirms. Well, says Qing Yang. She hikes up her sleeves, raising her sword to slash a streak of qi into the soil. She crouches down to brush away the gouged earth only to find a radish? The shik of an unsheathing sword sounds behind her. Qing Yang spins to see Hong Gong Jun crouching behind Bichun on the defensive right after a surprise attack, and their ghostly woman floating off towards the farmhouse at top speed. Hong Gong Jun, you said she wouldn't lie. She did not. The radish was buried. Qing Yang gives an anxious huff, then flies off after the woman with the help of her sword. A well-placed kick, and the ghost goes down, sprawling into the vegetables. She gives as good a fight as she can, but this is Qing Yang's day, night, job. Qing Yang tackles her underneath and drives the sword through her back. Her spectral form ribbons apart into the dark sky. Hong Gongjun catches up at perhaps too leisurely a pace. What were you doing here anyway, Hong Gongjun? Says Qing Yang, wiping dirt from her brow. I heard rumors that you disappeared from the cultivation world. Are you back now? Trying to steal my jobs? Lawanji is laconic as ever, and strangely clean after the scuffle. I seek your services. Huh? Says Qing Yang. Mine. Hong Gong Jun is such a distinguished cultivator. Can't you do it yourself? Lawanji gives a tiny shake of his head. Well, what about Zewa Jun? Can't you ask him? Another shake. I trust your discretion, Madame Luo. Qing Yang dusts her hands off, hefting her sword. She almost suspects she knows what he might want. We'd better go to mine, then. First, she taps on the farmer's door to tell him that the job is complete. He's grateful enough, and surprised when he sees Hong Gongjun looming behind her, dipping two low bows at them. There's something familiar about his gesture, and Qing Yang realizes people used to bow twice to her and Jin Zexuan, just like this, after they'd finished a job. Lawanji is a pretty different kind of companion, and makes good company, although his quietness makes her miss a more boisterous presence. They ride their swords through the night sky, the stars a whiz overhead, and the fields a dark patchwork below. Qing Yang rents a room at the top of a narrow townhouse that is easy enough to enter through the window. She offers Hong Gongjun tea in the dull lamplight of her lanterns, and kneels at the low table opposite him as he sips. Tell me what's happened with you. One hears so many stories. She waves a hand. Not, you know, that I believe all of them. Lawanji nods. I have not been a cultivator for a while. That is true. Do you mind me asking why? Lawanji's mouth tightens.
I have become a caretaker. I supervise the disciples.
Qingyang laughs in spite of herself. You've taken over your uncle. I hope you're not as strict as he was. Lawanji nods, which could mean anything.
I seek advice, he says, straight to the point.
Qingyang shakes her head. I honestly don't know what sort of advice I could give you, Honggongjun. I'm not even part of any cultivation sect now. I'm a private cultivator. I only deal with small local cases now.
Madam Luo has always been a skilled cultivator.
Qingyang huffs. Flatterer, tell it to me straight, Honggongjun. She pauses. Is it to do with Wei Wuxian? Lawanji goes quite still. It is, right? Have you found his spirit? Lawanji shakes his head. Qingyang feels her eyes widen. You haven't? Does that mean... Do you think... He didn't die?
No.
Lawanji says, a voice halfway between a gasp and a whisper.
No. I saw him die before my very eyes.
Qingyang is silent for a long moment. Honggongjun, do you mind telling me what happened? Lawanji's eyes slant away.
What is there to say? He was in pain. He didn't see a future for himself anymore. He threw himself off a cliff.
Qingyang doesn't know what to say to that. Honggongjun's version is quite different from what the marketside chatter has relayed to her. But even his abbreviated account sounds too raw for her to poke further. She defended Wei Wuxian 7 years ago. But after the ghost general killed Jin Zexuan, well, she never wanted to dig too deep there. What do you want to find him for? The question seems to make Lawanji remember himself. He straightens. His new hairpiece spears high into the air and arranges his sleeves about his side.
I can't find him with inquiry on my chin, says Honggongjun. You stood up for him once at Jinlin Tai. He thinks fondly of you. Can you find him?
Qingyang gets up even as she's snorting. It's been 7 years, Honggongjun. You're searching for a man who died following the demonic path, reviled and alone. He killed my best friend. What do you want from him?
He wasn't alone.
Qingyang pauses. Sorry? Lawanji lifts his head to look her dead in the eye.
He didn't die alone.
Qingyang will never understand what had lain between Lawanji and Wei Wuxian, but in that gaze, she thinks she can glean a sliver of it. The missing arc of the almost full moon, hanging pendulous just outside the window. Beneath the plumb-line posture, the stern bearing, the spotless and gossamer-like garb, Qingyang sees the shadow of a broken man, a body that has become a shrine, attended by a pyramid stack of fruit, and 3 gently smoking incense sticks. After all these years, Qingyang is a mourner too, but Lawanji has made an art form of it. It would be impressive if the circumstances were not so pitiful. She plucks a book from her case, rifling through the wafer-thin pages. I haven't done this technique in years, she warns him. Zixuan and I were impetuous. Arrogant genes, I guess you would say. It's from the south, apparently. It might get dangerous. Determination setting into his brow, Lawanji nods and pulls his chin from his Jiankun pouch. Qingyang squints at the instructions.
searching for some familiarity in the words that she hasn't read for over a decade. The procedure isn't difficult, but certainly risky. She and Jin Zuxian had been so assured of their skill, too foolish to take precautions. With a cultivator as distinguished as Han Gongjun supervising, Qingyang is being more judicious than Mian Mian. She passes over the open book to Lawanji so he can double-check her process. With her sword, she cuts a shallow wound on the back of her leg, hissing as the blade bites down, and uses the blood to draw a summoning circle around herself. "Speak to whomever appears," she tells Lawanji, before sitting in the middle of the clotting sketch and closing her eyes. The god who appears is not one she has encountered before. She meets him in the clear expanse that ripples like water and reflects the mercurial color of the sky. And when she kneels to kowtow, her knees do not touch the ground. He lifts her by the elbows as she averts her gaze from his red face in respect. His robes are trimmed with rabbit fur, his headpiece adorned with two long ears, and a jade pendant adorned with a double she hangs at his waist. He speaks in a language she does not know, filled with discordant vowels and abrupt stops, but by his divine power she can understand him. "Child, I will speak to him," he says. Possession is a strange experience. When she and Jin Zuxian did this, he was the one who welcomed the god into his body. The god is fortuitously gentle, but Qingyang still finds it disconcerting to watch him settle into the corners of her body, stretch out, relax. She watches as though separated from her body by a body of water, sluggish and deafened of the full experience. She sees Lawanji register when the god takes over, and sees him bow low, the ribbon on his brow brushing the floor.
"My lord."
"Do you know who I am, Lawanji?" says the god. In his foreign tongue, the name is garbled. "Lambong Ki. You have been a faithful disciple of mine, perhaps unwittingly." Lawanji does not move from his position.
"My lord."
"I am the god of love that rules your heart." Qingyang sees her hand extend towards the supplicant, but it is no longer her hand. The color of the skin flickers between red and white. "I am the god who hears your inquiry each night. I am the god who watches over the empty spaces by your hearth."
"Wei Ying,"
breathes Lawanji. "You seek him," says the god. "He cannot be sought."
"Why?"
Qingyang's shoulders lift. "He wanted to retreat. He retreated from life, and he retreats even in death."
"Will I never find him?"
Lawanji's head lifts, and in the murky distance between herself and reality, Qingyang feels a faraway jolt of surprise at the openness in such a stoic face, the tears flickering in his eyes. If she could still control her eyes, she would close them.
"There is no way of knowing, child. Something tells me that he will come to you when he is the least ready." "You have seen him?"
A shake of the head. Qingyang's hair swishes along.
"He does not want to be seen."
The despair on Lawanji's face transforms him into someone else.
I just...
"For what it's worth, child, I think he is listening." The god reaches out a red arm to tilt his face upwards, thumb away the tears. "You play a beautiful song."
"I didn't realize how dark a world without him was."
The god withdraws then. Qingyang meets him again in the clear expanse of her mind. The red tassels of his robe flutter about his frame. She bows.
"There is little else I can do," sighs the god, tucking his sleeves behind himself. "I regret that, Perhaps I can grant your wish instead. Any messages? Any news you'd like from the beyond?
The last time she saw him, she was throwing her gold robes onto the floor and hating his silent complicity. She doesn't hate him anymore. She could never hate him for long anyway.
My lord, there is someone. I'd like to know how he's faring.
The god smiles.
Not quite my domain, but I think I know who it is.
His shape shimmers, only to be replaced by someone in gold robes, with a familiar vermilion mark between his eyebrows. In death, his skin is even paler. The last time Qingyang saw him, she had been marching out of Jinlin Tai, cutting herself off from his sect. Now she grins in spite of herself.
Jin Zixuan.
He laughs.
Mian Mian.
Then, ow, as she bats him with her sleeve.
It's good seeing you again, says Qingyang.
Sorry I stormed out on your family that time, but you were being assholes. You kind of deserved it.
Jin Zixuan gives a rueful shrug. If that's what you think. I mean, here I am. I'm just sorry we never saw each other again.
Me too.
Jin Zixuan rubs his hands together.
How's it going now? Are you well?
Qingyang waggles her head. Went off by myself. Still in cultivation, but I run a private business now. She presses her lips together, fiddling with her cuffs. Gets a bit lonely sometimes, doing without the other disciples. Catching sight of his frown, she changes the topic.
How are you, then? How's hell treating you? Not too bad, considering there are 18 layers, says Jin Zixuan. My wife's here, too. Not sure if that's necessarily a good thing, but she's excellent company.
Jiang Yanli.
Yeah.
Jin Zixuan's dead white skin blushes. Qingyang snorts. And you spent all those years resisting her. What broke your resolve, Zixuan? Her soup?
Shut up, says Jin Zixuan.
I haven't heard much about your kid, Qingyang ventures. He's only about 5 now, I guess. Jing Guangyao and Jiang Wanyin seem to be pairing up to raise him.
Jin Zixuan raises his eyebrows, grimacing. Poor kid. Nothing against Dayao, mind, but he's probably too, I don't know, intense to be raising a toddler? And the less I know about my brother-in-law's child-rearing practices, the better.
He tilts his chin in her direction as she nods along.
You? You settled down yet?
Oh, you know me, Zixuan. I could never settle down.
She laughs when Jin Zixuan pretends to smack her. Nah, not married yet.
There might be someone.
Jin Zixuan raises his eyebrow in mock surprise.
Very funny. Yeah, no, I met this merchant on one of my night hunts. Not a cultivator. He was pretty nice, and I enjoyed being around him. He's a merchant, though. Duty calls and all that. Haven't really seen him since, but there's a chance he might come back.
I'm glad, says Jin Zixuan. No, seriously, I am.
I missed you after you left, Mian Mian.
No one else was ever quite as fun as you.
I'm incomparable, says Qingyang. I did miss you, too. We grew up together. You're like my brother.
Jin Zixuan gives her a smile, tinted with ruefulness.
I wish you all the happiness in life, he says.
And the next thing she knows is that she's kneeling on the hard floor in her top-story room, ringed by a summoning circle. The man before her is Hong Gongjun, clad in mourning white, tears scrubbed off his face and features rearranged into careful blankness.
Did you find what you were looking for? He asks.
Yeah, says Qingyang slowly.
She gets to her feet, shaking out her stiff legs.
Yeah, I think I did. You?
I'll keep looking, says Lawanji.
He rises to leave, executing a flawless bow before her. It was nice seeing you, Hongguanjun, Qingyang says without really thinking. You shouldn't be alone all the time, you know? It's not healthy.
I have my brother and my uncle.
He hesitates.
My son.
You should have friends, too, says Qingyang. Lawanji is silent. My door is always open. She crosses the room to give a literal demonstration. I could always use some company on a night hunt, too. Lawanji bows low again.
The cultivation world lost a woman of great integrity when you left the Jin sect.
And sure, it's a surprise when Lawanji emerges from her hay shed about 11 years later with Wei Wuxian, apparently resurrected, in tow. Hongguanjun has been a semi-regular visitor to their little home at the borders of Gusu. Qingyang can't fathom why he'd hide, but Wei Wuxian must be to blame. Even in Second Life, Wei Wuxian is chaotic as ever, teasing her, pinching her daughter's cheeks, pelting off at the first hint of commotion. Gone too soon, but Qingyang is sure she'll see him again if Lawanji has anything to do with it. She sends a short missive to the cloud recesses for when he returns. I found my happiness long ago. I'm glad to see you finally looking happy, too. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. Thank you for listening.